You want to take a seat? That was a great presentation.
Well, it's a little bit all over there, which is sort of like my life.
What do you mean?
Well, I have 5-year attention deficit disorder.
Yeah. Five year.
If I'm not in a different business every 5 years, I'm really unhappy.
Okay. That seems to be the rate for a lot of people nowadays who are trying to create things, right? They do one thing, and then they do something else. Don't you think that is maybe the common denominator among all innovators, is that they try something and then they try something else?
Yeah, I think it's also part that we're not really that good at some of the other things. Like,
well, what are you not good at? Would you say?
I am not good at things that bore me. And one of the problems you have, when your company hits about $50 million in sales, $50 million or euros, it's close enough, all of a sudden, as CEO, you find that you're spending all your time with boring people. Accountants, attorneys, Wall Street.
Yeah.
These are all people that are really not interesting.
But they're interested in making your money get bigger. Or no?
Yeah, but I think after you get a certain amount of money, it's much more important, much, much more important to have an interesting life.
What would you say is the most interesting thing about your life?
8 children.
Oh, your children.
I have 8 children, and I can assure you that no matter how smart you think you are, your kids will prove you otherwise.
Yeah, that's right. That's very true. I think it's interesting, the picture that you showed of the future, and you say that's where we want to go, this future, like the future city. How do you know that that's where we want to go?
I know that I don't like to look for a parking place.
Okay.
I know that when I go to a city that does not have cars, Venice, Zermatt, that there's a peacefulness.
That's right.
And a lack. I think noise is pervasive and ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And I really try to have noise-canceling headphones or earplugs whenever I'm in an airplane. But in general, our lives have too much noise in them.
But you know, you say that coming from the U.S. The U.S. is the consummate auto society. And can you imagine a future in the United States where autos become something that people, one, are not proud of anymore, and two, that people are willing to get rid of?
Well, I believe that we tend to homogenize society when in fact it'll never be homogenable.
Yeah.
That there are people like me who really want to be part of the future, and other people that will be drugged into the future kicking and screaming,
right,
with all toes and fingers dug into the past.
Yeah.
I mean, remember, at the turn of the 18th century, Luddism in the UK, Luddites became a massive movement, anti-technology.
Right.
Ned Ludd lost his job as a weaver, and he started breaking up automation factories as sort of a pastime. In 1840, there were more British soldiers deployed against the Luddites than were deployed against Napoleon.
Because they were, what, a threat?
Yeah. But the UK said, no, we're going to let innovation reign. At the same time, India said, no, mm-hmm, we're going to protect jobs. And as a result, India became a poor country because the workers had to be paid the same amount to compete in the world stage as the robots, as the automated looms were getting.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas England, I mean, if Ned Ludd really should have gone across the street and got a job building the British rail system,
mm-hmm.
which was also enabled by the steam engine. Anyway,
well, I think it's interesting. You talked about jobs and unemployment. That is something that has come up every day this week and every year here at CBIT. It comes up, and no one has come up with an answer.
I did.
What to do about unemployment, because unemployment appears to be growing, and you. But I think what was interesting is you said you get rid of unemployment with education.
Yeah.
And you're the first person that we've had here actually say that or bring those two together.
Well, it's more than education. I didn't finish my thought. Three things. Bad education. Right now, there are 2 million unfilled jobs because of qualification deficits.
Yeah.
So if we can do proper education, and part of that education is about the social contract. I mean, the United States has a lot of people in jail.
Yes.
You know? And you say, well, you know, if you have a lot of employment, just throw a lot of them in the slammer. You know, and it's not a good solution.
No.
But at the same time, I think that we have an ability to really fix that through proper education. I mean, Germany has a lot better job engine than the United States does.
But Germany Germany can't fill the jobs. I think they have several hundred thousand open engineering positions in the country, and they can't find anybody to fill it. And when you go to the schools here and you talk to teachers, the teachers will tell you that the kids don't think it's cool to study math, science, and the things that will lead them to be engineers. So what would be your answer to that?
I'd say fire the teachers. If a teacher, I mean, quite frankly, the biggest problem with education in the world are teachers. And you say, what?
Well, you had a good, I mean, we all had good teachers though, right? I remember
that's the exception. The rule, most of them are worthless. And what we really should do is have educational programs that the kids want to play. I've seen a class of 150 kids with one teacher as a mentor, two as aides. You can go in and watch a pin drop. The kids don't want to leave when the bell rings.
What are they doing?
They're working on projects on their computers. They're building with their Arduinos. They're doing YouTube videos.
So, but they're always doing something. They're engaged with a machine, though, right?
Exactly.
Well, isn't
that our life now?
Well, no. Let me play devil's advocate with you with that. We hear a lot today, and I hear this from my interns all the time. My interns will come in, you know, they're 19, 20, 21. They have always had this in their life. And they'll come up and they want to know how they can get a date with a girl who's also in the class with them. They don't know how to flirt. They don't read the nuances in body language and in how you use your voice to communicate. Those things they seem to have missed. Whereas for people in my generation, your generation, those things were almost second nature. So are we losing, by doing what you advocate, are we at the same time going to lose a little bit of our humanity?
Absolutely not. First of all, let's think of our school. And the school is, your assignment for this day is to do 20 high-intensity lessons. Take about 15 minutes. And then you have downtime. And now you're working on a project that there are two or three of you are involved with. And when you think that there's a girl or a boy that you want to have some kind of relationship with, you invite them to be part of your YouTube video, because you have to produce a YouTube video that requires two or three actors and actresses. And so if I don't know for you, but I know that if I were to go up to a girl and say, I'd like you to be in my movie, that'd be a good pickup line.
Well, I think it'd be...
you know?
Yeah.
And so I just think that because it's different doesn't mean it's worse. And I believe that the human condition will always gerrymander around the things that are awkward and fix the things that are a problem and focus on the benefits. What we want to do is get rid of regimentation. And have you ever stopped to think about how hard it is to be a teacher? There's studies all over the place, and particularly in the inner cities, the biggest problem teachers have is getting order. You know, having an environment that is capable of having order. I mean, if you're a 14-year-old boy and can disrupt a classroom,
You do,
because you think it's cool.
Right.
Why? Because you're a bad kid? No, it's because you're a 14-year-old boy. And so what you want to do is get rid of the stage. And it's quiet classroom is a stage. What you want to do is have it so that if you want to disrupt, nobody's listening. You figure out
Have you tried pushing these ideas in the world of education in the U.S.?
Yeah, and I've decided that what we need to do is bomb the schools.
Okay.
Well, okay.
Okay, you're not going to bomb the schools, but what's going to happen?
I think that the first step is you have to get rid of the idea that teachers are the saviors.
Okay.
You then have to get rid of all the administrators. In California, in Los Angeles, LA Unified has 1 million square feet downtown full of people, no teachers, no students. That, you could bomb that building and nobody would know.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that would happen is the schools would run better. I'm sorry.
I'm listening. But you know why a lot of these teachers would say? They would say that they are constantly, they're having to compete against a world that tells the kids that that it's okay for you to play games. I mean, we hear that all the time, is that all the kids want to do is play and play games, and they're bombarded with things that distract them from learning.
No, what they're doing is they're finding that their kids have interesting things to do and would prefer that to the boring things that the teacher wants them to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can say, let's get rid of the interesting things so that my boring stuff is better, or, God forbid, let's make the boring things not boring anymore. Mm-hmm. By using the technology.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, okay, the media landscape, we have video games that cost $2 million an hour of fun. Those are some pretty good production values. A commercial today, $1 million for 15 seconds.
15 seconds, yep.
Now we have a teacher with a piece of chalk outgunned.
Right.
Immature minds do not determine the difference between a good thought poorly presented,
mm-hmm.
and a good thought and a bad thought excellently presented.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's unconscionable that Grand Theft Auto, with its mayhem message and antisocial behavior, is as fun as it is.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact, integral calculus isn't that fun.
That's right.
But that doesn't mean it should be that way.
I want to go back to something that you had in your presentation where I have to applaud you for being so open about the fact that you didn't invest in Apple when Steve Jobs asked you to.
I've got some. That just happens to be my biggest mess up.
Okay, that's your biggest mess up.
I mean, I've got a whole, we don't have enough time.
Okay. But what would you say in the business world? Is that the biggest regret you have?
Say again?
In your business life, is that the biggest regret you have?
Not even close.
Well, what would you say if you could go back and there was one thing you could change? What would that be?
I wouldn't have sold Atari.
You would not have sold Atari.
We were at a cusp, and we could have raised money, or we could have sold to Atari. Understand, I was a farm boy from Utah, and all of a sudden, I was offered a chance to be richer than I'd ever thought possible.
Right.
And I thought it'd be cool, and, you know, in the acquisition phase, you're still going to run things, Nolan. Everything's this change. You'll just have all the money you need to spend.
Right.
It was a lie. Now, for example, I hate to do this because I don't want to sound like Al Gore, who thinks he invented the internet, but I actually think I would have owned the internet.
You would have owned the internet?
Yeah.
How so?
We were working on a game playing network over the telephone lines. And the idea was we'd have modems in closets in each area code. And in the U.S., you could dial to a local area code toll-free.
Right.
And then we were going to link those closets together with T1 lines.
Okay.
And I went through my notes, and the IP stack that we had, I mean, you have an address, and you have a recipient, and the packets go back. Our packets were very short because we were just going to send the joystick commands back and forth. and I get a real kick out of this. We ask ourselves, now when the people are playing games, will they want to communicate? We said, well, we can't let them talk because we don't have enough bandwidth, but we could let them type. We said, yeah, people won't type.
Right.
But we decided to provide for typing. But I'm convinced that if we'd have had that gaming network, excuse me.
It's okay, drink up.
Now remember, this was in 1977.
Mm-hmm.
We were going to launch it in the spring of 1978, right after Christmas. I believe that if we'd have done that, it would have grown into the internet. Because remember, you didn't have access to the internet till 1992.
That's right.
And so anytime you have an over 10-year lead, you get to see. You're the first person who goes around the corner and sees this networked environment.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think Atari could have owned the internet.
All right. So you knew Steve Wozniak, and you knew Steve Jobs. Steve Wozniak was on stage here a couple of years ago, and we also, we talked to him and asked him what he would do different and what he wishes that he had done. And what struck me is the first thing he said is, I wish that I had chosen a different internet provider. Because he said he couldn't download movies that well. I mean, where does he live? He lives somewhere in California. But what struck me about him is this is the man who invented the personal computer, right?
Right.
And that was not the first thing on his radar about what was the most important thing about him. I mean, you're known as, you know, the man who gave us Atari. But do you see that on your radar as the most important defining moment in your life?
Very interesting question. It was defining from the fact that it opened the door for me for a lot of further things. You know, probably the hardest step is Nolan Bushnell, engineer at Ampex, to becoming chief engineer and licensee of computer space to another company, to the founder of Atari, mm-hmm. and then selling it for a whole bunch of money. Each of those are very hard steps. And so after that, I always had on my pedigree founder of Atari. I'm sitting here probably because I founded Atari. And so was it key pivotal for my life? Absolutely. Also, you know, there is something about getting your life settled a little bit that lets you sort of move on. Like,
yeah.
You know, 6 months after I sold Atari, I met my wife.
Okay.
And we got married, you know, and started having kids. And And that really changed what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really, at this stage in my life, I just love the fact that I have a big family. I mean, we all get along, we all have fun, we play games together, drink too much.
Well, when you guys all get together, what do you do? Do you play games or,
I mean? Oh yeah.
So, but now, do you sit at the table with, I mean, you've got what, 8 children, and do they have children?
Some of them do.
I mean, if you guys all get together, do you sit at the table and ever talk with each other, or are you always playing games?
We're always talking while we're playing games.
You're talking while you're playing games.
We don't play games when we're eating.
Okay.
We usually fight about politics.
Okay.
And various other things.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, our dinner table has been described as verbal hand-to-hand combat.
Verbal hand-to-hand.
And it really came from a dynamic that I started out. I used to lie to my children all the time. But they were not just regular lies. They were massive fabrications.
Such as?
And what I really wanted them to do was to find out, is to think for themselves and say, Dad, you're full of crap. That was like a win.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so what I'd always try to do is to be subtle in what I'd tell them to see if they could pick out the fallacy.
Mm-hmm.
And if they didn't, I'd harass them for it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say, you actually believed what I said? Shame on you. And I believe that creates flexible brains.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the worst thing you can do to your kids is say, this is what I believe, therefore you should believe. What you should do is think.
What do your kids do for a living?
My oldest daughter has her own PR company for technology, and she actually does my own PR, and she has a little girl. My second daughter has a PhD in myth. No, it's not a mythical PhD. She actually has it, so
okay.
She's a storyteller.
Okay.
My next son does a thing called Tubic Circus, and he's just raised $15 million to create a micro-amusement park using VR and various other things.
Okay. So that's connected then to what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. They found out that they knew more about the game business over the dinner table, and that gave them a real benefit.
Okay.
They rejected that until they started to get really serious about making money.
What about, I've been asked to pose this question to you. Did you come up with the idea for Missile Command?
Actually not.
Oh, okay.
I love the game.
Yeah.
That was done by a guy named Lyle Rains.
Okay. Was it inspired by the Cold War and
Absolutely.
What was going on at the time?
I came up with the ideas for Pong, Breakout, Asteroids.
Mm-hmm.
These were sort of mine. I did one called Gotcha. Boy, that was a stinker.
Yeah, I don't remember that one. No.
You haven't heard?
No.
I did several of them. My hit rate is less than 50-50. I've created a massive batch of stinky games.
What would you do today if we could say, all right, you've got a chance now, create something, a game, what would it be?
Well, I'm actually working on some Alexa games. I really like the idea of voice activation.
Voice activated games?
I like the idea of an ever-present dungeon master.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and it's actually harder than you think because the feedback loop is harder than you think.
Yeah.
But I really want that to happen.
We've got time for questions from the audience. And I just want to let you know, this is correct. When we're done, people can come up if they'd like to get a selfie with you. You've got time for that too.
Oh, right? Absolutely.
Okay. So any questions from the audience for Mr. Bush? Now, we've got one right here. Any others? Maybe we can collect a few. We've got one there. We've got a microphone here first. Okay.
Thank you for the very, I'm a fan of the game and I'm very excited about the presentation and the talk. And one simple question, how to face the future? How did you face the future 10 years from now or 20 years from now?
I think that 10 years from now, we are going to be approaching about 90% of virtual reality matching with base reality, so that it won't quite pass the equivalent. In fact, I've been trying to figure out what the Turing test for virtual reality matching base reality is. But I think once you get about 90% there, you will have enough experiential that'll give you the permission to believe that you're in the holodeck. And I believe that's 10, maybe 15 years away. But we'll get there. I think in terms of playing environments, I think the total inside of your house and the total inside of your car will become a gaming environment. I think that we'll have some very interesting gaming environments in self-driving cars. I think that there will be a geosport aspect in which a urban center becomes a game piece in which you physically are moving around in solving problems. We're getting a little of that with escape rooms, but I think that there will be a whole set of games in both urban centers and a technically enabled forest. Stuff like that.
We got a question right here.
We talked about unemployment, and I think you owe us the two more reasons beside the bad education.
Yeah. Bad education, bad government, and failure of imagination. And the failure of imagination comes in to say, what do we want to do? There is a paralysis of a blank sheet of paper. And so I feel like one of my jobs is to give people the ideas of what the world can be if we choose to do it. Mm-hmm. And then government, unfortunately or fortunately, is either going to be enablers or obstacles. And there will be a very interesting thing that happens in the next 20 years in which the power of culture will determine whether we're in the first or the second or the third.
Can you name a politician who you would call an enabler?
No.
Is that because you don't want to tell us, or because you don't think there is one?
I don't think there is one.
I mean, well, that's a sorry state of affairs.
Well, understand, the politicians are driven by a whole bunch of metrics that have nothing to do with the future. Because remember, most of the people, they're generally elected.
Well, they want power.
They want power.
But are you saying that the future then has nothing to do with power?
I believe that the future is scary to too many people to get people elected. Mm-hmm. And I believe that what will happen and what has to happen is that we get microclimates of innovation that become so overwhelming that the politicians have to do it in order to maintain their power. I hate politicians, all of them. I mean, I just think that they're a really corrupt, nasty bunch of people.
Did you vote in the last election in November?
Yes, I did.
Dare I ask who you voted for president?
No, you may not. Well, no, it's a situation where I really wanted to vote for none of the above. You know? And I believe that none of the above would have won and been much better.
Bernie Sanders.
Huh?
Bernie Sanders?
Well, you know, I don't like government in general, but I believe there are pieces of intelligence in the political side. Most of it is not in Washington.
With all kidding aside, do you see anybody in the political world, though, that you think has that light in them that is looking towards the future?
I mean, there are pieces like, you know, right, because education is so important to me.
Yeah.
I see some interesting moves going on in Singapore. I see some interesting things going on in Finland. I see some interesting things going on in China.
But now, Finland, always ranks up at the very top when we're talking about education. But you say China. What is it about China? That's surprising.
China is doing a lot of things with technology in their schools. Korea as well.
But now, I got to ask you though. Those are countries where the suicide rates for children are the highest, where their education systems are known for being
very dogmatic.
Yeah, and married to repetition and memorization. It's the opposite of what you're describing.
Well, when I say there've been glimmers, because both of those countries have some tests going on.
Yeah,
they're interesting. Like, I've seen some, you know, and of all places, Nevada, they have some really innovative schools. And yet, if you look at the statistics, the Las Vegas school system is, like, at the bottom of the list of things. And yet, within that school system, I've seen some of the best schools, because there's only one or two.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's this disconnect between absolutely horrible failing school systems, but one little glimmer of hope over here in the corner.
That's right.
And I believe that's actually helpful, because those glimmers of hope all of a sudden give direction. I mean, one of the powers that the United States has is a lot of these things are left up to the states.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so the states kind of experiment one here, and then the things that are good get copied and that sort of thing.
And it's the same way here in Germany.
Yeah.
You know, it's the states that do it. Yeah. And you think that's a good thing?
I think it's a good thing. When you try one thing, you don't have any match racing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's better if you always focus on outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And you mix up the beans, and then you count the beans and say, this is the outcome. Let's emulate that more closely, and slowly you get to a better place.
Okay. Any more questions? I think I saw a couple of hands in the back there. Anyone? We've got a gentleman right here in the front, right here. Hier ganz vorne.
Hi. Yeah, I'm just wondering what you think about the fact that people is still downloading and using the games you created in the start of your career.
I think you ain't seen nothing yet. The one thing that I worry about with virtual reality is escapism.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Okay, let me paint this picture. In virtual reality, I'm a rock star. I live in a penthouse. I have the most gorgeous girlfriend in the world.
Yeah.
I put on a show and I get tremendous accolades. I'm interviewed for all the nice papers. I go to the nicest restaurants. But in reality, I make cappuccinos at Starbucks.
Right.
You know? And so I find myself being more and more in my fantasy world than in my real world. And then pretty soon, I lose my jobs at Starbucks. I can't find a job, so I spend even more time. And slowly, I get kicked out of my apartment. So I live in a closet at my mother's house in virtual reality. And slowly, I forget to exercise and I die.
It's like a drug.
It's like a drug. And I think that we will have some social problems because of very, very good virtual reality worlds.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to deal with that, but you know, maybe that's how we deal with unemployment. Just slap them into virtual reality, make them happy.
Well, I mean, we have that problem now with people using, you know, video games and gaming as a way to escape, right?
Absolutely.
We've got a gentleman over here with the Atari t-shirt on.
Okay, so no one...
Great t-shirt.
It's awesome. Yeah, thank you for creating the most amazing company back then, but also thank you for being a serial out-of-the-box thinker. Because like when I think back, my first Atari, I imported it from the States back to Europe, discovered that NSTC is different than the PAL system,
that's right.
But it was still amazing, even in black and white.
Yeah.
And here I am today.
You know what NTSC means? Never the same color twice.
It's true.
The worst protocol any technology has ever had.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Totally agree. And here I am today, Facebook live streaming, like the session here. So the future we're in today is a result of out-of-the-box thinkers, and I'd say you are one of the serial out-of-the-box thinkers. What could you tell us to inspire different regions of the world, different people, to think out of the box? What is your secret that can push us out of the box?
Boy, there's a whole bunch of them. But the most important trick is be aware of the things that irritate you and say, how do I fix that? Mm-hmm. And so for me, standing in line irritates me. And so I'm always trying to figure out, how do I get rid of this line? How does somebody get rid of this line? I like to travel, but I don't like traveling. So I really like the idea of being able to get into a hypertube, go at Mach 6 across the ocean, and be able to hit Europe for lunch and back to California for dinner. I mean, that is interesting.
Yeah.
Is the technology there? Of course. So all we have to do is get a whole bunch of people out of work because of self-driving cars and hire them to build that tunnel. Done.
Wow.
I'm being a little crazy here, but that's the first thing. The second thing is I like to extrapolate. And I think it came from being a Go player and a chess player, where you're trying to think steps ahead. And I get used to thinking steps ahead. And I think that sometimes that helps. The other thing I do is I believe that innovation often happens when two things collide. And so just as a thought process, collide two industries together and try to think about what happens. For example, what happens when you bump concrete into a carpet? You know, is there a concrete carpet that makes sense? Or maybe you have concrete involved carpet and you can lay it around something and then turn water on it and it goes. When you have a telephone and a microwave, what do you get when you push those things together? A communicating microwave that talks to your stove and that sort of thing. I don't know. Collide different things and make lists. Make lists all the time. Then push the lists together and say, if I take this item on the list and push it with this item on the list, what do I get? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's a way of really creating some weird stuff. Then get rid of self-editing. Embrace silly. Embrace toys. Embrace insanity. At Atari, we would have planning sessions, and we'd rent a house at Bajaro Dunes, beautiful place, and we were trying to figure out products. And so I'd say, let's make lists of products. And we'd get 10 or 15. And then I'd say, okay, now you've got to really do silly, because we need to get 25 products on this list. But now, the sillier the better. The dumbest, I want the dumbest ideas you've possibly got. And all of a sudden, we'd get 25 ideas. Mm-hmm. Then we'd have lunch, and I'd turn the list upside down and say, okay, because I'm the craziest boss you've ever had, we're only going to work on the craziest 10. And what happens is crazy ideas are often self-edited by your perception that they're crazy. But the minute somebody says, okay, now we have to execute on them, now instead of being, this can't be done, you have to say, how do we do it? Which is a different mindset. And invariably, one of our best products would come from the crazy list, because all of a sudden we turned our brain around on it. So I don't know if that's helpful, but.
Well, I think I speak for everybody when I say thank you very much for embracing the crazy. We appreciate it very much. Let's give them a round of applause, everyone.
Remember, insanity is underrated.
It's underrated. That'll be the takeaway today. And Mr. Bushnell will be here if you want to come up and get a photo with him or shake his hand or whatever. He is here. And I'm going to be the first to do a selfie with you, if that's okay.
Well, I have to leave you with one more sort of last idea.
Okay.
Don't hire dead people.
Don't hire dead people.
Dead people.
Okay.
They basically have no life, and they're in a box.
Yeah.
And there's a whole bunch of people in the world
who are dead.
Who are dead and don't know it.
Yeah.
But once you detect it, don't hire them.
Okay. Good. Thank you. But you know what? Thank you there. It's really good. Fantastic. Here, let's do it. I have to tell my dad. You know how many hours I spent with my dad playing? Sorry, here we go. 1, 2, 3. One more. All right, very good.
Great thank questions. Thank you.
It was a great interview,
good
too.
Fun.
Thank you.
Oh, okay. Yeah.